following message is from Fairfield West Baptist Church. We hope it is a helpful resource to know, love, and follow Jesus Christ. For more information, visit our website at fairfieldwestbc.org.
Definitely, the first year was definitely pretty difficult. I was young and I was immersed in expectations of what it was to be a young youth pastor at the time, 22, just out of college, Bible college. I felt this pressure to perform, and it was almost as I saw it, it was almost like being a youth pastor was like starting a small business. Again, I was young. That was my perspective. It was about providing and producing a vibrant ministry, so I had to build a brand. I had to go reach my base or clients, my customers, these students, right? I had to sell them on Jesus. That's what I thought at the time as a young man. I could have used some mentoring, some leadership in my life, some development. That's where I was. However, not just those expectations were there. I was immersed in experiences that felt more like World War III in my life. It was not, if you remember, if you were back in that time of our history of our church, it wasn't an easy moment. It was a difficult time in our church's history. It was an overwhelming time for me and my family. I felt like I was basically ill-prepared to meet the challenges that we were facing. So I honestly began to entertain whether or not I would, if this was what vocational ministry looked like, I didn't know if I could hang in there, but I did. And by the age of 27, crazy enough, I became your pastor. You can look at me, it's been a while since then, right? You know, I'm not 27 anymore. My hairline at least tells a different story. And I don't feel quite as old, but I definitely don't feel like I'm 27, maybe 37, maybe 47. I don't know. But I became your pastor. I began to work hard to revive our church, to renew its name, to reclaim the credibility of our ministry. You know, again, I was young, and I had picked up what not to do at that time in my life, but I needed, again, some mentoring. I needed someone to invest in me because I didn't necessarily know what I was doing. What they teach you in Bible college doesn't really prepare you to lead a ministry as this. And so I remember being asked, though, in that moment, and people were asking, what do pastors do? I remember this young man asking me, like, what do you guys do all day, you pastors? You, like, sit around and pray? And if I could tell you how many times I've heard it as a joke, you guys only work one day a week, you know, kind of a thing. Or I'll never forget the moment I was at a family gathering and it was announced to the entire family that I didn't have a real job. And it was overwhelming as a young man trying to understand all that. And of course, I know that many don't understand the role of a pastor, and it's not as respected in our society as it once was. But I allowed those comments usually to roll off my back, or I laugh with them. It's not a big deal. But I was determined as a young pastor to work harder in my craft than any other man would work in theirs. And so that's what I sought out to do. I sought out to work hard, and I was busy. You know, I prayed. I did pray and study the Bible and prepare sermons and lead worship gatherings, and I married and I buried, and I did all the things that pastors do because I was your preacher, I was your teacher, I was your spiritual director. I was your pastor, this shepherd guiding, your counselor advising, sometimes a therapist rehabilitating, but there was a lot of work to be done there. But beyond those things that most people think of, I was the CEO of a corporation. I was the executive director of this nonprofit. I was this visionary, this strategic planner, this business administrator, this operations manager, this community organizer, and a chaplain for the city. There was a lot going on. I was busy. The pressure to perform was like anything I really had experienced. I used to think when I was in college, in my undergrad, that I couldn't get any busier than I was. There was times I would carry 18 or even 20 credit hours in a semester. I was working full time. I was a junior high director of my church. There was a lot going on. I never thought I would be busier, and I had even scraped the surface of it once I got into this job. And a lot of it was self-imposed. The expectations didn't come necessarily from all of you. It came from the things that were working inside of me. I really loved my job, and I worked hard at it, and I took pride in the fact that I was busy. People would ask, "How are things going?" And I would reply, "It's good, but it's busy." It was the affirmation that I sought to prove, perhaps, that I was needed and I was valued, because there was so much talk about what pastors do or don't do, or what really their job is about. I was going to show, maybe if not for those who were looking in, maybe just within my own insecurities, my own ambition, my own ego, my motivation, if I wanted to be honest, if I'm just transparent, it wasn't always the fact that I had it where it needed to be. It was the fact that I just wanted to build something and prove something to show that my effort mattered, that my life and my life's work mattered, that it was worthy, that I somehow measured up, that I was important. So I settled in a rhythm of life that made me extremely busy. And here's what I'm getting at. When I took a breath and I looked up, I learned this wasn't unique to me. In fact, I believe a lot of people are busy trying to prove something to themselves or to others around them that they matter, that life means something. And so they fill their life full of stuff, busyness. There's a hectic pace to our life. I'm not the only one that is busy. In fact, everyone is busy. I'm not unique in that, and wasn't unique. In fact, when was the last time someone asked you what you've been doing, and you said, "You know, I'm just bored." You know, it was a thing back in the day when we were kids, in the summertime perhaps, you had nothing to do, and you're like, "I'm bored." We don't even hear kids say that anymore. There's too much to do. We have filled our lives full of things to do. Even in the season when maybe we're sick or hurt, you're struggling to recover, and you have time on your hands, you might be bored. But people don't usually say, "Yeah, I got nothing to do. I'm just binging Netflix." It's almost like this moniker, like we're just busy, we're productive, we're people who have things to do and places to go, people to see. We're busy. I'm good, but I'm busy. In fact, working 40 hours a week is a thing of the past. In fact, 86% of Americans today work more than 40 hours a week. And a lot of that has to do with these labor-saving devices we've been given, right? These things that now we used to have to go to the office to do our work, go to the job site. Now we take the job and the work home with us, and we can do it about almost anywhere. We can go and work remotely, and so what we're doing is we're constantly working. We are so busy working, but we're also so very busy playing. We know how to play in America. We are good about playing. There's so much to do in our culture that entertains us. There are these sports and these arts and these hobbies and these shows and these leisure activities and these nature preserves and these travel destinations and our community events and all these Skyline Chili restaurants everywhere. There's so much to do. There's so many three ways to eat. You know what I'm saying? There's so much good in the world that we just enjoy to play and play hard. So we run at this breakneck pace, and we're just so busy. But all this busyness does something to our soul in a detrimental way. In fact, I mentioned a few weeks ago, Dallas Willard said, busyness is the greatest enemy of spiritual life. It penetrates deeper than just our calendar. It penetrates in the inner being of our life. Corrie Ten Boom said this, if the devil can't make you sin, he'll make you busy. There must be a better rhythm for life in our life. And today I just want to talk about it. There is a better rhythm. We've been on this journey, if you're visiting with us, we've taken 2024. This year, we're trying to shift. Last year was our 50th anniversary as a ministry. What do we do from here? I want us to continue to do so many of the great things we do, but I want there to be a definite change in what we are focusing on as a ministry. We want to know, we want to love, and we want to follow Christ. If you're visiting, that's really all we are about. We want to know Him, love Him, and follow Him. We want to invite you to be a part of going His way, believing that the way of Jesus gives us life and have it abundantly. We just are convinced of that. And so as we've been focusing in this path, so many times we're fixated on programming. No. We want to be a part of this relationship, this person. We want to spend time with Jesus. We want to become like Him, and we want to just do what He did. That's it. That's what we're aiming at. And so we've decided, how do we develop this relational rhythm in life? This world was created to be in rhythm. And the Bible's not silent on them, and we've been talking about them. Today, we talk about the very first one. And I think it's probably, I would suggest and argue, even though I bet the vast majority haven't really processed this too much this morning, I believe this is probably one of the most important ones. In fact, it should account for almost 15% of your life. That's a lot of time to practice this rhythm. What am I talking about? It's the ancient practice the Bible calls Sabbath. I want to start here because when we don't create time and space for Jesus to work in us and on us, we just don't have time for Jesus. It doesn't matter what your other disciplines are. There has to be intentional moments with Christ. And of course, this is what Jesus did. So I want to explore that this morning. As we've learned, everything in our spiritual formation depends on having time with Him. And that's why this Sabbath is so important. So the first thing I just want us to look at today is, what is it? Perhaps you've heard it, you've heard stories about it, you don't really understand it. We're in a different day, we're in a New Testament day of grace. Why are you talking about an Old Testament principle of Sabbath? Just hang on with me. We'll talk about all that this morning quickly. But I want to start in the very first chapter of the very first book. In fact, I want to start this morning at the very first verse. Most of you perhaps have it already in memory. If there's some verses we know, this is one of them. Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. That's the context. From the very beginning. So we're going to talk about Sabbath, and it was from the very beginning. It was introduced to mankind. And you look at verse 31, the very last verse of that first chapter says this, that God saw everything that he had made. And behold, it was very good. And the evening and the morning were the sixth day. Look at chapter 2, verse 1. Thus the heaven and the earth were finished, and all the host of them, everything that we see, every living thing in it, everything was completed. And all of this, and on the seventh day, rather, God ended his work which he had made, and he rested. Underline that word. On the Sabbath, on the seventh day, from all his work which he had made. Here, Sabbath has its introduction. In the very opening scriptures, we see Sabbath defined. We read how God created. His genius in chapter 1 is all on display. The sun, the moon, the stars, the sky, the earth, the people, the living animals, everything, all were created in 6 days. But on the seventh, God rested. And that word in the Hebrew is Shabbat. It's where we get the word Sabbath. Of course, this is the verb. In fact, if you've watched The Chosen, anyone watched this Chosen movie? Have you heard them talk when they're talking about stuff not to do? It's Shabbat. I'm not sure why they're speaking English and why did they call it Sabbath. But Shabbat, it's the Hebrew word, is right here, rested. It's Sabbath. It means to stop, to cease, to desist, to be done. This is what God did. He stopped, he ended, he finished his work. But there's more to Sabbath that needs to be described here. It's not just to conclude that he finished the work, but having finished the work, he beheld it. He looked it over. He saw that it was good, and he rested. But it's not that he was tired and he needed a break and to rest. It's not at all what it's after here. The description, the idea here is that after a long week of work, it pleased him. After he declared it all good, it's as if he just pulled up a chair and he looked over everything he did and he marveled in it and he enjoyed it and he celebrated it. It was a pretty important moment for us to consider. Let me show you this picture of what I created. This is what I created for my daughter back when she graduated college. She was getting married. She got engaged, and then she graduated, and this was sort of my gift to her. It was something I made for her. It was an inside thing that my wife and or my daughter and I did with her together. Rather, we loved to play chess. She was always trying to beat me. She could never do it, you know, and it was always this inside thing. And we just played. So I made her own chessboard. But when I made this, when I was done with it, it took a while for me to work that out in my shop. And it has a drawer. You open up the drawer on both sides. I was really proud of it. So this is what I did. I sat it there on the island in my kitchen, and I'm taking pictures of it. This is a couple years ago. But this is what it was. It's like, yeah, look at that. I did that, you know, I did that. I was done. This is the idea of Sabbath. This is the invitation of Sabbath. It's a day to cease laboring and to enjoy a day of resting. It's a day of delight, an entire 24-hour day to celebrate this created world, the life we have in it. Our family, our friends, and God himself. It's a day when God has my full attention. I'm fully aware and I'm available. Therefore, it's a day of great intention. And now you might understand why last week I concluded asking you, inviting you to be intentional and developing a rhythm. You have to identify in your life. You have to be intentional. It's something you don't do accidentally. You have to prepare for it. If you want to be with Jesus and become like Jesus and do what he did, there has to be a plan. There has to be intentionality, and it's a relational plan. It's a missional plan. You are on mission to do something in your life. This is super intentional. It doesn't happen by accident. A lot of times we're waiting for the proverbial lightning to strike and for God to move in our heart in such a way that we become like this awakened. And those moments come. I don't want to belittle them or devalue them, but I want you to know most of the time it's when we're quiet before the Lord that he begins to speak to us. We see that even patterned throughout the stories of Scripture. Maybe you can look some of those up. But that's what takes place in this invitation. It's a day to reconnect then with my body and soul, to be awakened to all that is beautiful. That's what Sabbath is intended. It's a day when we put down perhaps our phones because we're intentional. We recognize those are the big distractions of my life perhaps, or we let go of the job and we just look up and we wonder at what God has created and we enjoy it, all that he has done, all that he is doing. In essence, then, it's a day to be renewed, to be living in this renewal, this rhythm created in the very fabric of creation. Let me explore that a little further and take you a little deeper. Look at, if you would, in verse 3 of chapter 2. Notice this, that God blessed the seventh day, sanctified it, because that in it he had rested from all his work, which God created and made. Two things that are worth noting. The first, God blesses the seventh day. Interesting to note, in the first chapter, he blessed the animals. And he told them to be fruitful and multiply. Right? And then, if that was in verse 22, I believe, in verse 28, he does the same thing with the humans. He tells husband and wife to be fruitful and to multiply. There's something about propagating life and the life that you have, husband and wife, in that relationship and the joy you have in relationship. That's part of blessing. It's bringing life and value to the world, right? And then he comes and he blesses not an animal, not a person, but a day. Why would he do that? Here's the idea. The Sabbath day has the ability to multiply life upon the earth. Think about it. Life can be exhausting, just depressing and just frustrating, and all the things we go through. It takes its toll, and we're weary and we're battle beaten and broken at times. But the Sabbath has a way of providing not just perspective, but hope and renewal and optimism and grace and favor and blessing. Practicing the Sabbath is fruitful, and it can multiply life upon this earth. Think about the capacity that we lack when we are tired, when we are frustrated, we're grumpy and grouchy and just don't have the capacity to engage people and love them and care for them. It's like I got my own stuff. Why am I worried about your stuff? But no, when you are rested, when you have perspective, heaven's perspective, when you are looking through the lens of the Creator versus just working through the stuff all the time, you have a very different capacity to give and to create life among those who need it. That's the beauty of Sabbath. He blessed the day, but that's not all he did. He made the day holy. It tells us in verse 3 that he sanctified it. That word, if you have an ESV or a different modern translation, it probably says it was holy. It doesn't say sanctify, but it means that's what it means. In the Hebrew, this is the word, holy. It's a holy day, meaning it was removed. The first time the word holy is used, it's in reference to a day. Isn't that strange? It's not reference to God himself. It's reference to a day. Why would he do that? Holy means to be removed from common use, to be set apart. This is, again, odd, isn't it? It's a day. When we think about things that are to be holy, what do we think about? We think of maybe of a temple, sanctuary, it's sacred, a place, God's house. Maybe the altar of God is holy. The vessels and the instruments used in sacred worship is holy. People are holy. We're to be consecrated, set apart. But here he doesn't talk about those things that take up space. Here, what's holy is time. Again, why would he do that? Why would he not create and bless that holy, those things that are take up space, but in reference to that which is of time? Perhaps it's because God cannot be contained in space. God is everywhere. And as you go, where you go, God is there. In that essence, the Sabbath, this moment of time, his whole day is God's cathedral. Not just the church experience, the whole day. And it's here, if we choose then to practice as our life's rhythm, this invitation to mimic what Jesus did, it's here where we will rest and be renewed in him, by the time we spend with him. However, if we choose not to take him up on his invitation, we'll miss out on the blessing, right? And we'll get what we've always got, or what you usually get. We get those frustrations. We get those busyness, frantic, stress-filled workings and doings that often fatigue us and burn us out and make us emotionally unhealthy. You see, here's the fundamental reason of what the Sabbath was given. Life without time with God has a devastating effect upon our soul. So that's why he gave the Sabbath. That's what the Sabbath is. It's an invitation to have time with him so he can work in you, work on you, work through you. That's the beauty of this rhythm. So what do we need to know then about this rhythm? If that's what it is, what do we need to know? The first thing is that it was commanded in the Old Testament. It was a command to keep it, right? It was created for them to keep it. It was a command. And I want us to go quickly to Exodus chapter 16. I want you to see this in context of how it was and why it was for. And in Exodus chapter 16, Israel has left Egypt, and they're out in the desert, and they're starving, and this is when the manna is given, and God has given them instructions about when to get manna, what it's for, how to prepare for it. It's in that context where he brings up the Sabbath. And I just want to look in verse 22, rather, of chapter 16. Verse 22, it came to pass that on the sixth day, they gather twice as much bread, this manna, 2 omers, that's a measurement, for one man, and all the rulers of the congregation came to Moses and said unto them, This is that which the Lord has said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath, but underscore this, unto the Lord. So bake that which you will bake today, and see that which you will see, then that which remaineth over lay up for you to keep until the morning. And they laid it up till the morning, as Moses had told them, bade them, and it did not stink, neither was there any worms or maggots there. And isn't that good? That's a good thing. No worms, no maggots. And Moses said, eat that today, for today is a, here it is, Sabbath unto the Lord. Today you shall not find it in the field. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none. And it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none, just like the Lord said. Go figure. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long refuse you to keep my commandments and my laws? That'll keep a preacher up at night. I mean, the people did it. Moses got in trouble. Like, what the heck? What's going on with that? But here's what he says. See that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath. It's another good expression. He has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, he gives you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide every man in his place. Let no man go out on his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. It's commanded in the Old Testament. And so what I guess what I wanted you to see is this wasn't just a day of rest. This was a day of worship. The Sabbath was unto the Lord. The Sabbath was commanded as a holy day unto the Lord. It was a dedicated day to the Lord. Therefore, this resting is not the same thing as a day off. It's half of it, but it's about living intentionally in your time off and your rest, where you're not just doing what you want to do and you just don't make time intentionally for the Lord. But no, you are intentionally worshiping him in this moment. It's a day to delight, and it's a day to celebrate and enjoy all that God has done. Absolutely. But make sure we are not just enjoying the things of God, and we're not as concerned at all about enjoying Jesus himself. I feel like that's been our rhythm for so many years. We want what Jesus wants to give us, but we're not all that inclined to want Jesus in our life. Make sure you include Jesus in this rhythm, this worship. So grateful we worshiped in spirit and in truth this morning. There's a lot of elements this morning where we could worship. But it's just an hour. There needs to be a day where the Lord is in front of us. That's what he's after. Say, well, when do we Sabbath? Well, a lot of people Sabbath on Sundays. It's traditionally, historically, the Sabbath was a Saturday from Friday night to Saturday night in the Jewish culture. They moved it to the Lord's Day, the church did, because that's the day of the resurrection. It's the victory day. A lot of people do that. I personally, my Sabbath, if you would ask me when my intentional rhythm is, it's Thursday night to Friday night. Friday is my day off, and when I come home from Thursday night, I just want to get alone with my wife, be with her, and celebrate all that life has given. I want us to be together. I want us to be present with each other. I want us to be intentional. I want us to pursue Christ in our family and do what he did. I just want to rest and be renewed. You need to develop perhaps a day, or perhaps you would say, well, that's the issue. It's not only was it commanded in the Old Testament, it's somewhat controversial today. When asked if we should still observe the Sabbath, most people would say no. Most people in the church would say no, we don't have to be under that law. Why would we be under that law? We're not under the law. We're in a day of grace. In fact, when it comes to even the New Testament teachings, the Ten Commandments, Sabbath is the only one that wasn't really given to us to observe. I mean, the other ones we still sort of have to observe. And that's sort of the other argument. It's like, Look at the Ten Commandments. You know that the Sabbath was a part of the Ten Commandments, right? In fact, it's right there in the middle. It's sort of the bridge between the laws of God and the laws of man. And this is how you do it. It's how that healthy tension, that rhythm. And one would argue, which one of the Ten Commandments, even though we're not under the law, which one of the Ten Commandments are we just to do away with? Should it be that murder one? You know, should it be not lying? Should it be not, you know, that adultery one? I mean, which one was not a good idea for us to embrace? Some further suggest, as we already demonstrated, that the Sabbath predates the law. It was before the Torah from the very beginning. So people would ask me, Rob, what is it? Are we supposed to keep this? Is this a law? I don't know what I would think on it. I don't believe it's something we have to be bound to. But this is the heart of what I went after this morning. I want you to see how it was given. It's a gift. The Sabbath is a gift. In fact, it's just wisdom from above. It's just wise to practice a Sabbath. You can live a hectic life, a crazy life. You can run on 4 hours of sleep if you want. I'm not going to throw a stone and tell you to stop it. I'm not calling that this morning sin, but I'm asking, is that smart? You'll be tired and grumpy and a difficult person to deal with. It may not be bad for you to do it. I just think it makes you dumb to do it, right? It's not smart. To burn the candle at both ends, it eventually catches up. This is wisdom. Sabbath is a wise gift. It's a beautiful rhythm. Sabbath is God's way of setting up our soul to flourish and thrive in a crazy, chaotic world. And although the world prides itself on being 24/7, you and I were not created to run like that. And because we do, even though we don't all articulate it in our objections, we feel when there's a challenge for us to spend time with Jesus, we say, I don't have time for that. And if you honestly don't have time to be with Jesus, you're just too busy. And if you are too busy, your life will pay the price of that busyness. You won't enjoy, not the level that you could, this gift that we have called life. I got one more text I want us to go to quickly, and then I'm finished. This is actually in my conclusion, so I'm bringing this to a fast and abrupt ending, all right? But this is so, so important. When you think about Jesus, go ahead and turn to Mark chapter 2. When you think about Jesus and his relationship with the Sabbath, wouldn't you agree that it was the Sabbath that he was always getting in trouble? As you read the Gospels, Jesus was always getting in trouble on the Sabbath day. Here's a good example in Mark chapter 2, verse 23. It came to pass that he went through the cornfields on the Sabbath day, and his disciples began as they went to pluck the ears of corn. Now understand the context of this. The disciples weren't stealing someone's corn. This was appropriate under the law. This was their social system in the day of how they would take care of those who were hungry. They were required to allow X amount of people to glean from the field. And this is all that they were doing. They were just gleaning what they could eat. They weren't stealing. That wasn't the problem. The problem is they're doing it on Sabbath. So in the Pharisees' mind, verse 24, these legalists, they said unto him, behold, why do they on the Sabbath day that which is not lawful? They're not eating and taking a snack. They're harvesting the grain. They are working. They are doing that which is unlawful. And Christ takes this on. He reminds them of what David did in the Old Testament with the temple showbread and all the different things, or the tabernacle showbread. But the verse I really want you to look at is verse 27, that familiar verse we've heard before. This is what Jesus said unto them, that the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. You see, the Sabbath was a beautiful practice that became through time this cold religious duty. And when Jesus spoke that verse 27, I think the people that heard it really desperately needed to hear the second part of it. They needed to hear that man was not made for Sabbath. But I think in our culture, in our context, many of us need to hear the first part of it. That Sabbath was made for man. For it's not that we have hundreds of rules like the Pharisees put up these fences around. They had 613 laws, not just the 10, 613 statutes. There were rules around rules and laws. It was so burdensome. It's not that we have all those burdensome rules in our context. It's that we don't have any. We have no intentionality to impose within our own process and purpose an intentional path for us to make sure that we spend time with Jesus. We do this sometimes with our children, don't we? We make sure there's family time. And then sometimes we have date nights with our spouses and to make sure that we're investing. Should we not have an intentional weekly moment to celebrate all that God has done in our life? Sabbath is a gift. We live in a very noisy and chaotic and digital, crazy, traffic-filled, nonstop world, and we need this rhythm. And one more thing to be said in Mark chapter 3, the next chapter over, if you keep reading in verse 1, he entered again into the synagogue, and there was a man there which had a withered hand. And they watched him, whether he would heal him on the Sabbath day. They're up to their same tricks. Why? They wanted to accuse him. Again, Jesus has a conversation. He's so patient that way. But in his frustration, look at verse 5. When he had looked round about on them with anger, being grieved for the hardness of their hearts, he said unto the man, stretch forth your hand. And he stretched it out, and his hands were restored whole as the other. Did you notice, as you read the Gospels, that the majority of Jesus' healings happened on the Sabbath day? Some of his best work. It isn't a big and grand and an emotional experience. It's in those quiet moments. Well, we've just got alone and along with Jesus, and we intentionally put him in front of us and our family. Intentionally, we related with each other and with God. And we had this mission that this day was different than all other days. We're going to stop. We're going to rest. We're going to be present. We're going to eat. We're going to dance with our spouse, right? We're going to love one another. We're going to worship Jesus. Jesus said this in John 10. He said that the thief, he comes to steal, to kill, and destroy. And we know so much about that. But he came to give us life that we might have it abundantly. So many are alive, but they are not living. They are breathing, but they are not truly alive. So come and follow Jesus. Go his way. Do what he did and take your Sabbath every week. It's a gift. You want to work on your development and your spiritual formation. You want to draw close to him, close to others. Take your Sabbath. Slow down. Practice this rhythm of enjoying Jesus and everything else that comes from his hand. Will you bow with me?
If you found this message encouraging, be sure to subscribe to our podcast and consider sharing this content with others. For more resources, visit us online at fairfieldwestbc.org or download the Fairfield West Baptist Church mobile app. And again, thank you for listening.